Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor, filling in for your host, Michael the Pod Pina. I'm Rohan Nakhni, joined today by Sports Illustrated senior writer, New York Times best-selling author. Industry don't like him because he's thugging and he's dangerous. Please welcome to the show, Chris Herring. Chris, how's it going, buddy?
What is wrong with you, man?
I just am going to keep throwing different young boy lyrics at you.
You really are. Yeah. And I'm like, you're going to force me to...
Can I... I went to a lot of Suns games this postseason, and they used to play Gangsta by Young Boy and then What Happened to Virgil by Lil Durk back-to-back. And those two songs are just... forever stuck in my head, like, and I can't listen to them without listening to them back to back. Like, if I don't listen to them in that order, like, there's something wrong in the universe.
There's something wrong in the universe that you keep hitting me with these lyrics to begin with. But it's good stuff. I'm working my way through. Like, I've used the off season to work my way through some of the Future album that came out at this point a couple months ago. I feel like there's new stuff, other new stuff. I haven't listened to the Drake album yet. People were roasting that.
You get to the new Pusha T yet? Drake album. I don't think. I heard that that wasn't. I haven't even downloaded it to my phone. Yeah. Honestly, I'm like pretty incapable. I'm like gotten so bad at listening to new music. I hear it at NBA arenas. That's like my, way now. Like that's so. I'm lost until the season starts. Well, Chris, we actually have a surprising amount to get to on the show today. We got some great emails. Please keep the emails coming. openfloormail@gmail.com. It's the off season. We need our listeners now more than ever. So once again, that's openfloormail@gmail.com. Don't hesitate to send in an email. Like I said, a lot of things I want to get to on the show this week. We mentioned the emails. We have some news. Something I want to talk about real quick, Chris, there's no great way to bring this up, but something we haven't talked about on this podcast, and I got to raise my hand and say I'm part of the problem here. I think it's something that the NBA media in general has not done a great job of discussing, and that's the ongoing situation with Miles Bridges, who was charged with a felony this week in a domestic violence related case involving his partner, the mother of his children. Again, these are just allegations. At the same time, I mean, she had an Instagram post in the wake of these allegations. I guess what I can say is I think it's safe to say he's been credibly accused of domestic violence. And I think a lot of times what happens in these situations, Chris, is we start talking about how long should he be suspended? Should he get his next contract? And sometimes that's hard for me to reckon with. Just to kind of bring a little bit of my own personal, ideology into it. Like, I think you would agree with me. Like, I don't want to live in a punitive society. I don't want to send another person to jail. I especially don't want to send another person of color to jail. And, you know, to me, when we start talking about should he get suspended 25 games or 50 games, we're losing sight of, you know, what are we really doing for the victim? What are we really doing for this situation? And I don't know what the answer is. And I'm speaking from a position of privilege as a man, like you and I don't kind of live with this fear walking around day to day, this threat of violence that women do. And I understand why some people might want to see him be suspended for a whole season or never play again, et cetera. But something I hope to educate myself on, something I hope to write about soon. But I just hope that whatever kind of quote unquote solution we come up with this, it's got to be victim focused. It's got to be, how do we get the person who was abused in the situation, the resources they need? What can we do to make sure this doesn't happen again? What can we do to rehabilitate? I just hope we start kind of looking for those kinds of answers. It's not to say that, you know, we want whoever perpetrated these acts to kind of escape accountability, but I'm just hoping we can find a better version of that accountability than just talking about, you know, number of games suspended. You know, the NBA, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure the NBPA at least came out with a statement, right, in the wake of the overturning of Roe v. Wade, you know, about how they support men. Well, if you really support women, you know, this is an opportunity for you to put your vast resources to use, figure out a way to kind of attack the societal problem, whether it's counseling, whether, you know, how are you getting those resources towards victims, et cetera. There's got to be something the league can do there, and they can afford the experts who can figure it out, who know the best path forward, et cetera. But I just wanted to address that because, you know, we see the news stories, but to be honest, I feel like at large, the NBA community, media at least, has just been kind of not sure what to say about all this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a horrible story. And like you said, I feel like the frame of reference that I think most fans were using to bring it up was just like, yo, this dude fumbled the bag, which I understand the sentiment. I understand that was the context in which people were talking about him anyway before this. He also had was it an Instagram post or whatever it was several weeks before that in which people were saying like, yo, Miles Bridges, what are you doing? That just, you know, did not look the smartest to post. So people think that way independent, I think, of really horrendous stories like this one. And I think we can, you know, we can acknowledge that. You're absolutely right, though, that I kind of feel like the focus is lost when we're already jumping to like, how long will he be suspended for? I don't think a team is going to want to touch him right now anyway. And to be honest with you, they shouldn't. You know, I can't remember whose story I was reading, but the punishment that he's going to get either from, you know, a guilty verdict, you know, even if it's dropped, he can still, I think, get suspended. Mm-hmm. The only way in which he would escape any sort of punishment, I think, is if it went to trial and he was found not guilty, which, okay, that's a lengthy process that you'd have to go through to get to a not guilty. I feel like it would probably be more likely that there would just be no charges filed or charges would be dropped if the woman decides she wants to take that route, which, by the way, she's already spoken up about this. So I don't even know if that would happen. But either way, like, that's not the most important thing here. No team should be focused on signing him anytime soon. You know, you talked about the rehabilitation stuff. However much counseling would be required to just kind of put some of these pieces back together again to get her the help she needs, to get him the help he needs, the child the help, you know, that the child needs. It's horrible. But I, you know, like, I'm with you in terms of like the punitive stuff. I'm not someone that just loves throwing the book at people. Not that it's my call, but like, I think about Michael Vick all the time. I absolutely love dogs. I've got, you know, basically like a mural, like a picture of my dog on my big executive desk here. I, to some extent, like, broke up with my significant other of 4 or 5 years in part over the way I felt like she felt about my dog, treated my dog. So I am very much a dog person. And even when everything happened with Michael Vick, I was not the guy went to prison over that. Mm-hmm. So like I was not lobbying for him to have extra extra punishment after mm-hmm. that. Like he's already served time in prison. Mm-hmm. That's more significant than a suspension from a league.
Yeah.
I feel like the punishment is that teams are going to think 85 times before they sign this person.
Yeah.
That is punishment. So I can't think that far ahead of like what sort of suspension does he deserve.
Mm-hmm.
The guy might go away. And if he does, then, you know, then I feel like you would hope that he comes back a better, more complete, mm-hmm. filled out person at that point. But it's way too early to even speculate like what that punishment looks like. Let's figure out what happens with this case first. Let's figure out those details first. But it's I haven't thought about him from a basketball standpoint since this happened. It's just a brutal story that the details of it as they came out were just getting uglier and uglier, and it's just really sad.
Absolutely. So that's it. We'll have to wait and see. And again, I'm hoping to write about this soon. There's more to be said, and you know, hopefully present some ideas about what it can look like for a sports league to deal with this. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a societal problem. It's on men to stop thinking it's okay. So, you know, hopefully we can get something resembling some kind of resolution from this situation. But, you know, obviously our thoughts are with the victims of this case and just how harrowing it is. Like you said, the details are pretty rough. Unfortunately, there's no really good way to transition into a basketball podcast from that, but you know, we know it's off season. We know you guys have sent in your emails. There are things we want to get to. So Chris, let's get to the basketball portion of today's episode. I want to start with a little bit of news that we got this week. James Harden has finally signed his new contract with the Philadelphia 76ers. 2 years, he's taking a pay cut. I think he's coming in under $40 million a year, under $35 million a year. I believe the final total was a little under $70 million. You know, Harden traded to the Sixers. They looked great, and we all joked about it on this podcast. Let's wait and see what happens in the playoffs. Lo and behold, I mean, he had that one great game in the second round, but it was a strange playoffs for the Sixers because, you know, they had this Embiid Harden pick and roll. For some reason, they just didn't run it enough. Embiid gets hurt. Harden can't really pick up the slack. Let me start here first, just before we get into the kind of the full Harden experience and our thoughts on Harden and the Sixers, etc. Mm-hmm. What do you kind of make of him taking the pay cut? Because to be honest, I do respect him deciding to take that move. You know, it allowed him to bring in guys like PJ Tucker, Daniel House, etc. What'd you make of him taking the pay cut?
Can we be real about this? Like, I know when the signing, the potential signing was discussed, you know, because it was funny, like our editor Matt hit me yesterday, like, hey, he knew I was gonna try to write something today. I wasn't sure what I wanted to write.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, hey, like, he floated the Harden thing, and I looked at it thinking like Harden backed out or something, and it was like, oh no, Harden's just like signing the deal, and there's like a definitive number on how much it's for now. I was like, we've kind of known this was going to happen for several weeks now. Like, it's been reported since before free agency started. And yeah, it's been floated that like he was going to take a pay cut. But since before the season ended, the NBA season, not the Sixer season, we've been saying for a while that this was likely that he was going to opt out of his deal and probably take less money this year for the hope of making more money in the future. I don't see this. Like, granted, it's a technically it's a pay cut. You can frame it that way. I remember covering Phil Jackson when he was floating to Carmelo Anthony that he could take less than the max and that it could make Carmelo look like a less selfish player by doing that. It's window dressing. I'm not using that to say Carmelo's a selfish player. I'm using it to say like it's the way you're phrasing it. So yes, it's technically a pay cut, but it's also like he didn't play very well last year by his standards.
He wasn't looking like a max player.
No, and he wants to be one. And he, you know, if he was hurt, this is like a good make. This is a make good year for him. Is his hope. I imagine if he plays really, really well this year, he's not going to opt in next year. He's going to opt out. and get one last max before he closes shop. Like, that would be my perception of it. And I wish that we could kind of be real about that. Like, I don't think it's, it sounds really good, and there are incentives and motivations to make it sound like a pay cut from his end, from the people that his agents and his agency is sharing that information with. Of course you're going to frame it that way, but it's, I don't think that's realistic. And you know, I, like, let's be real. He didn't play like someone worth 45, 46, 47 million this past season. He might be able to get back to that. And if he does, then he would be able to break the bank next year. So I think that's probably what this is. So I haven't, you know, I haven't really made much of the pay cut because I don't really see that as being what it is.
That's fair. And I'll give you that. I definitely think he's left himself the option. Certainly. I mean, the literal option to go make up that money after 1 year. I give him credit to this regard in that, whether it's a pay cut or not, the salary he chose did allow them, because of cap machinations, to go out and get a PJ Tucker, to make certain signings that otherwise the tax apron, this line, that line, et cetera, would have made it difficult for them to do. So I give him credit in that regard. But I agree. I mean, he had to recognize he did not have max value on the open market. He was not a max value player last year, which kind of brings me to my question. I mean, this was a guy who legitimately was kind of forcing us to reconsider who the best scorer in the NBA was and who the, like, sure, you know, his isolation scoring, et cetera. His last two seasons, you know, he forces his way out of Houston, never really appears to be quite in shape with the Nets, hurts the hamstring, unable to finish the playoffs healthy. Last year, you know, doesn't want to deal with the Nets. Don't blame him. That team looked miserable. Gets his way to Philly. He has moments in the regular season, but in the playoffs, I mean, completely outclassed by Jimmy Butler. Ironic, just because Embiid said, I think Harden's probably the most talented player I've ever played with. He can't really do anything for the team when Embiid is hurt. I'm just going to go for this question, Chris. I'm just going to, it's the offseason, you know. Do you think his career has been a disappointment?
So I'm going to say no, just because I feel like on the most base level,
I mean, yeah,
I mean, he came in the league. People thought he could be really, really great. We saw some of the potential. I mean, obviously Houston gave him the deal that they did off what they saw in Oklahoma City.
Isn't it funny what, like, a max used to be, by the way? It was like 5 years, $80 million.
Yeah. A little different. A little, yeah. You know, and it's like that's from when James Harden's career started, let alone looking back at the, you know, the days where Magic Johnson was getting a $25 million offer for 25 years. You know, it's like times have changed just a tad. But no, I mean, if I'll put it this way. If Oklahoma City had known that he developed into what he developed into and had that potential to be that sort of scorer and an MVP, they would have just paid him, or they would have paid him before they paid Serge Ibaka, which was maybe the mistake and all that. It's never a disappointing career when you win an MVP. Not to mention that, like, he's not the most athletic guy. So when you look at, like, his build, like the fact that sometimes he comes into, you know, like, he really, Luka really is him. As far as, you know, people use the him phrasing as like, oh, he's the man. No, Luka really is Harden in a lot of ways. Like, they're not overwhelmingly athletic. They're pretty big for their position, but I think they're bigger just stature-wise, as far as sometimes they carry a little bit of extra weight, but they decelerate so impressively. They have step backs. They can get wherever they want on the court. They're the best scorer on the court no matter who they're playing against. Like, it's really difficult to stop them, and they're also, like, A1 passers. So given the way that Harden looks, the way he plays, like the fact that he absolutely could have won a title and maybe two, and I, you know, someone might say, like, when would he have had a chance of winning two? They were favored to win the title when he was with Oklahoma City. They were favored over Miami that year.
I mean, that Rockets series was
exactly, you know, what was that, 2018, where they're up 3-2 against they were really the only team that had a really, really good opportunity to knock out a full-strength KD Warriors team. They should have done it. Maybe they do it if Chris Paul doesn't get hurt. So I'm like, you know, yes, he should have a title by now, just based on, like, if you were to, you know, the those 10,000 simulations that you run, like, how many times would he have won a title? He probably would have won at least one, I would say at least 35 or 40% of the time, maybe higher than that. So I'm not going to call him a disappointment. Like, you absolutely would say, man, like, where is the playoff performance that you'd like to see out of him more consistently? Man, he really falls off in moments where you'd expect a superstar to step up. Man, he really, you know, should be in better shape most times. Yeah, you would say all that. But I'm not going to call him a disappointment, because he could have won multiple MVPs. He could have won multiple titles. You know, he is someone that has gone from, I think, leading the league in scoring to then leading the league in assists. Like, it's really hard to do that. He's really multi-talented. He's not a great defender, but he's not nearly as bad as he's been made out to be. Mm-hmm. He's, I mean, you have it. And frankly, for anyone that's been in the, and it was silly, but like, anyone that's been in the best scorer of all time conversation, or like, you know, is this guy a better scorer than Kobe, than Michael? The fact that we had to ask the question, you can't call that same person a disappointment when you're acknowledging that they lack the sort of athleticism that those people do. The Shaqs, the Michaels, the Kobes. He's every bit as good as he's been talked about. He's been disappointing at the same time. So it's disappointing, but he's not a disappointment.
Agreed. I think I would agree. He's not been a disappointment, especially you started coming off the bench. He turned into an MVP. Incredible career. What he is, and there are players who've been like this at different points of their own career, it's disappointing. He's a victim of his own success. Is what he is, because the expectations are high based not on hype or whatever, but what he's done on the floor, but based on the numbers he was able to put up, the way he was able to control games. I mean, there were times where, I mean, he's ISOing and you're like, who in the world wants to be on the island with this guy right now? Like, this is terrifying. It's the most terrifying place in the NBA to be, is Harden's got that low crossover dribble working and he's sizing you up. And yeah, I think we just want more from him, not because we're, you know, ring culture and all those things. It's because he's that good. He's that type of player. These types of players usually win the NBA Finals, usually have legendary playoff performances. And it's been, you know, it's just been a bummer to see him not have that. And, you know, there are times when it's out of his control, like when Chris Paul gets hurt or when, you know, he hurts his hamstring. But there are other times when you wonder, why didn't you maybe come into the season in a little bit better shape? You know, do you kind of have another aspect of your game or something else you can go to when teams have maybe seemingly figured you out? It's what all great players have had to do. You saw Steph this year, like that game four in Boston was one of those, like, whatever it takes performances. That's what I love about the playoffs. Sometimes you just have one of those games with the superstars, like, whatever it takes. And Harden hasn't had enough of those. So I'm with you. It's been disappointing at times, but overall, career has not been a disappointment. I do want to talk about the Sixers for a second, though, because I think they've had a sneaky, brilliant offseason. I love them bringing in D'Anthony Melton, who they just kind of got for free, basically. I mean, they give up a first-round pick, whatever.
I know.
Like, he's such a good player. I don't understand why the Grizzlies did that. Then they get P.J. Tucker, which is a double whammy move. You take him away from the Heat, who just straight up don't have a power forward anymore. I don't know who's starting at the four for them. If it's Caleb Martin, they're done. You take him away from the Heat. He's a perfect fit next to not only Harden, but Embiid. Literally the exact kind of guy they needed in a playoff series last year. I think they've had a fantastic offseason. What do you think of what they've done this summer, and where do you maybe have them as things stand right now in relation to Milwaukee and Boston?
Man, it's really hard to not like what they've done. I mean, I took a look, and I thought I had it pulled up here. Let me try to pull it up again now. Just their depth chart is just kind of scary looking. If we're keeping it a buck, man, like, it's a really, really deep team, just making a couple of pertinent tweaks. So, honestly, they're definitely not any worse than they were last year as far as, you know, I think they're a top four team for sure. I'd kind of be surprised if they're not in the top three, which for what we're looking at, we're looking at a Boston team that got better and is still pretty young outside of Al Horford. We're looking at a Milwaukee team that if they put their foot to the pedal and they're healthy, Giannis is healthy, they should be right there in that conversation. And, you know, I'm curious to see where Miami ends up. Like, Miami could always be injured. Their guys kind of tend to be. But you also know that they'll be in that conversation as far as no matter where they're seated, they would have the chance to knock somebody out. Mm-hmm. I see them finding their way somewhere in that mix. I'd be a little bit surprised if they finished any lower than third if Embiid is healthy. I mean, I think mm-hmm. we basically watched a season where Embiid was really motivated after feeling like he probably deserved to be more firmly in the MVP conversation the year before. And then, you know, dude was like, all right, I'm just playing. I don't care. You know, I'm going to play this whole season. I'm going to make noise in this conversation. He did it, you know, and still wasn't enough, which I know he felt shafted from that standpoint. But the rest of the roster around him is really, really nice. I mean, you have a year of like having Paul Reed as your backup center now, not having to do the whole DeAndre Jordan dance. Now that's Denver's problem. PJ Tucker should be a great fit for them. You know, I don't know if maybe the whole contract is something that I would have signed off on for that much money, but, you know, I would expect him to be a big difference maker for them this year. And like we were saying before, Melton is like a pseudo second, third string guard for them, which is like, wow.
He's behind Maxey and Hart. I mean, yeah.
It's a little crazy to think about. Like, this is a really deep team, man. And, it's hard, like I said, it's really hard not to like them. It all kind of unravels a little bit if you lose Embiid for considerable time. So, I mean, I think, like always, that's the question. But just on the surface, if they're able to stay healthy, this is a really good, scary team that I do think if Harden does revert back to where he had been before, if he was unhealthy at the end of last season and now he's healthy again or effort or fit mm-hmm. or gel, you know, just gelling better, having more time with the team. It's a team that could win a title. I just kind of, because of Harden and because of everything we just talked about, I'm absolutely going to take a wait and see approach with it. But yes. I mean, it's a team that absolutely has potential.
I'm with you.
Finals potential.
I'm with you. On paper, I think you could really argue they're top two in the East. I haven't loved Milwaukee's offseason. To be perfectly honest, I like
no, the they haven't done much for them,
but yeah, they haven't done much. I wish they'd gotten at least one more wing. It's going to come down to Harden, as you mentioned. I mean, if he looks like even how he looked his first stint in Brooklyn before he got hurt in the playoffs, he was playing fantastic. The assists were way up. He was playing really, really good basketball. Remember, there was that brief conversation: can someone win MVP if they were traded midseason? And blah, blah, blah. He was playing really, really well. If he can be even that guy, I mean, I think they're really scary. I mean, and that version of Harden plus last year's version of Embiid are as good as any duo in the NBA.
Yeah.
But again, that depends a lot on Harden. You know, through the media, he's been saying the right things about coming back in shape and working on his body. And, you know, we've seen guys do it. We've seen Chris Paul do it. People who are able to extend their careers, extend their primes by taking care of their body. If he's able to do that, they might be onto something. So a lot hinges on him. But yeah, I'm really, really expecting them to be in the conference finals this year. It's to me, it would be, I mean, for a lot of reasons, but Embiid's got to play in at least one conference finals, man. Come on. He's got to make it at some point if he manages to stay healthy. So I think this is going to be their year for at least that.
Wow. So who do you think that are, what do you think that Boston will make it back? I guess I'm wondering, like, who you think they're going to supplant Miami?
Unfortunately, I do think Boston is going to make it back, not to discuss that team while we don't have to.
You sound like a friend of mine that will, and thinking that Boston will do great things.
Yeah. But yeah, I do think I'm liking Boston and Philly as things stand right now. Okay. Obviously, we still have these Mitchell and KD trades potentially hanging up above us, but that's who I'm liking so far. What about you? Is that crazy? I mean, I don't want to make you make a pick if you don't have to, but that's where I'm at.
I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I rock really hard with what, really heavy with what Milwaukee did this offseason either. They basically have stood pat, but they also were, you know, a game away from beating Boston without the second best player on their team. The second best scorer on their team. They were asking Drew Holiday to take between 20 and 25 shots.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Which, I mean, I've never seen so many 18 points on 22 shots stat lines.
Drew Holiday's making 7 to 9 shots. It doesn't matter how many he takes.
Basically what was happening.
Yeah.
It was rough. Like, Drew Holiday, I've said for years on multiple podcasts, I've written it, Drew Holiday will always be one of my favorite players to watch. I was not enjoying watching him play in that series, like, offensively. Like, I understood that it was very much like, it was, you,
he did,
you
remember, he did what he had to do, but
yeah, like, did you ever watch the Cosby Show? Like, Sandra auditioned to be Claire Huxtable, and it's just, it would have been really weird watching that show with Sandra as Cosby's wife as opposed to his daughter. Like, it's just certain people are not meant for certain roles, and I was not enjoying Drew Holiday be a second scorer in a series against Boston's defense. Let me just put it that way, with no Chris Middleton.
You went all the way back to the Cosby Show for that kind of, just for our younger viewers, that's like Glenn Powell auditioning to be Rooster in Top Gun Maverick, but instead he had to play Hangman.
You only given me 1 week, Ron. I've not watched the movie yet, so I still don't know what you're talking about with Top Gun or Top Gun Maverick, but thank you.
No, that's a great way to put it. Drew's a Sandra, not a Claire. And they were asking her to be Claire in the playoffs, and it didn't quite work. So, yeah, I guess we kind of derailed ourselves a little bit there. But anyway, neither of us are thrilled with what the Bucks have done, but agree that Middleton coming back should make a huge difference for them. What a bummer that injury was. But, yeah, I like the Sixers, and I think Embiid and Harden both being in shape is, I think, going to go a long way for them.
It will, if that's the case, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
You ready to dive into an email or two?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, this one comes from Elliot. Shout out to Elliot, who says, "Hi, Open Floor Globe crew. I hope Michael is getting some good reading time in. When my son came a few years ago, I had lots of time and binge rewatched the 10-hour A&E Pride and Prejudice series." I didn't realize they made a series about that, too. He said, "Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Michael, Rohan, and Chris, for all your book recommendations. Rohan, if you like that Manson book, you must check out Dark Alliance, The CIA, The Contras, and The Crack Cocaine Explosion by journalist Gary Webb." You know I love books about moving weight, Chris.
Push a T. Okay.
Yeah. For my NBA question, what deals have you been most surprised by in the past season or two, with teams proving especially prescient and the move forcing you to reassess player value and fit? For me, it was the Grizzlies unloading Jonas Valanciunas. He seemed great there and often the only reliable end-of-game scorer outside of Ja, but obviously many other guys are ready to step up, and in turn, Steven Adams has fit well. You could also go the other direction, moves that you thought seemed smart that were duds for non-injury reasons. Interested to hear your thoughts. Thanks for all the entertaining pods. Elliot, thank you so much for the email. Chris, I'll lob it up to you first. Do you have a move that's happened in the last few years that maybe you were especially wrong about that now is your opportunity to admit that it didn't go the way you thought it would, either positively or negatively?
Oh, yeah. No, I've got ones on either side. I've had ones prepared on either side. So the one, I'll give you both. The one that I'm still kind of like, wow, that happened was, not to recency bias, but Andrew Wiggins just swung in NBA Finals. Mm,
yeah.
He was just an all-star. I thought the trade made sense just because it was very clear that D'Angelo Russell was not going to be the answer there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you even really needed him next to Steph once Steph was back healthy was, you know, fair to wonder that. So Wiggins at least filled more of a need for them, could kind of take on more of the Harrison Barnes role, but with maybe more individual ability and talent. So that, and not just him, but also like anybody that watched Jordan Poole as a rookie is probably still kind of wondering how he developed into what he is now. Granted, he was not great through the finals and great through the, you know, even the conference finals, but I did not see him becoming what he is, who he is at this point. So those two things, like, I just didn't see them happening or the way they did or resulting in a championship necessarily. On the flip side, the thing that I thought would happen that I was very, very wrong about, we're still seeing the undoing of that now. I thought that Utah had a very cute concept by going out to go get Rudy Gay and Eric Paschal to go run small ball five for Utah. Obviously, that did not work out. You know, every Utah fan under the sun was saying midseason, this is not working, this is not working, this is not going to work. And I was like, just give it time, give it time. And obviously, it did not work out. You know, it was that probably in hindsight was trying to, instead of like caulking or like, you know, drywalling a wall that, for instance, my bedroom has a massive crack in it. I live in a high rise and there's a massive crack that they're like, oh, that happens when you live in the upper parts of a building and it sways a little bit. You're going to get cracks. It would be like putting a piece of tape over the crack and expecting it not to grow. Or trying to fix it and you have to get it drywalled again. It just doesn't work that way, you know. So I thought that would work. You know, they were the number one team the year before. They got out to a really nice start this season. And yeah, it clearly did not work. I think Rudy Gay had like a 22-point game his first game in with the Jazz or something like that off the bench. And it was all downhill from there. It did not work. And now we're watching the Jazz load piece by piece, seemingly. So, although they are getting a lot of draft picks back for it, so who knows? Maybe it will circle back around and be a good thing for the Jazz. Who knows?
So, I had one, and you can probably read my trade grades about this, where I just expressed like utter confusion. Why would you be doing this? And it's a recent one, but the Mavs trading for Spencer Dinwiddie, I was like, oh, this team is taking a step back this season. They're not trying to win. They're going to retool in the summer. They wanted to get rid of Kristaps' contract. I was like, they're taking back on Bertans. And at the time, remember, Dinwiddie was not having a good season in Washington. It sounded like the chemistry was messed up, not shooting the ball well at all. Like, he was not shooting it that well from three. And I was like, this is not going to work. Like, you need shooters around Luka. I'd rather roll the dice on Kristaps getting healthy and them reaching their full potential. I remember before the season, Mike telling me how good of a pick and roll duo they were, etc. Lo and behold, the team kind of takes off. They play incredibly well defensively after that trade. Dinwiddie's like all of a sudden hitting game-winning threes. Didn't he hit like two in a row, like back-to-back?
Two or three in the same week. Yeah. I wrote a story about him that week. Yeah, so I remember.
One against
Brooklyn and one against somebody else.
And I was like, this was the guy you were supposed to leave open. And then, you know, he ends up being a very key part of their playoff run. You know, Luka's out for the first few games of that Jazz series. Dinwiddie's important there. They end up making it to the conference finals. After that trade, Bertans even got burned in the playoffs, which was shocking to me. He was getting burned in that Sun series. He had some moments against them. So that was one that I was like, this team's trying to take a step back this season. And I could not have been more wrong both about the fit and the direction the Mavs were trying to head in. So, I mean, shout out to them because that ended up being a really smart trade, and they're going to need Dinwiddie now with Brunson gone.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think about that a lot. I just kind of feel like
they're not the same player, certainly, but
they're not. But absolutely, that responsibility is going to fall to him. But it's interesting because there's no question Dinwiddie is not generally as consistent as Brunson is. They both have flaws, you know. I think Dinwiddie's a taller player. Brunson's like more solid than he is physically and just as far as like game to game performance. And quite frankly, like if Dinwiddie on any level looks like the player that Washington had for that stretch of the season, because remember, Washington had just gotten him. And I mean, like, that's the sort of, if you put it this way, your boy went to, I've been on a little bit of an edible kick lately.
Okay.
I went to the dispensary. It's like the second time I've ever gone. I'm not like a regular cannabis buyer, however you want to put it. Got my edible, opened that boy up, and I was like, wait a minute. I bought 10 edibles. There's only 9 in here. Like, immediately I'm mad because I'm like, this is defective.
Hey, you got shortchanged. Yeah.
That's how Dinwiddie looked with Washington. Like, my boy was looking defective.
He looked like a 9-pack of
like a 9-pack where you were supposed to have 10.
Nine pack of 10 edibles.
He was rough. I mean, I will say, like, he expressed some real frustration. I don't know if he quite brought mental health into it, but he was just kind of like, when you're not wanted and you kind of feel like they're just making up stuff about you as far as, you know, not being a good teammate. He's like, I haven't said anything, done anything to anyone. I'm just trying to play. And, you know, he's has injuries and stuff like that, too. So it's not, it would be understandable if you need a little bit more time. He did not look right for a while. Now, obviously, Washington is a wholly different situation than Dallas. But all I'm saying is that I've seen he's looked inconsistent enough at times to raise the question, I think, fairly of which version of him will we get when he is back with Dallas. Like, he was really, really hot for parts of the season. He had a really nice stretch at times during the playoffs. He's not much of a defender.
Yeah,
despite
he
being
wasn't
a lot
consistent
bigger than Brunson. And he's just, so I do worry a little bit just because I kind of feel like that's the problem, particularly against the Warriors that Dallas had to begin with. It's just like, this is a group that is so hit or miss where they will hit 15 threes and a half, and then the next half they'll hit two.
Yeah.
And 17 threes in a game sounds good, but it's like the composition of it matters on some level, particularly when Luka's creating everything for you. Like, you have to have Dinwiddie giving you something if Luka's playing on the ball that much. So we will see. It'll be interesting to see how he comes back this season. Maybe he benefits. Maybe Hardaway being back really benefits them too. I thought that was a really big piece they were missing last year.
Well, the Mavs are calling that their big offseason addition. It'll be interesting. It definitely worked. Yeah, true. Christian Wood. It'll be very interesting. It certainly worked for them last year, but he was in a much smaller role, so it's going to be a lot more interesting to see what happens without Brunson. Yeah. I agree. We're going to have to do a whole podcast on edibles at some point.
I don't know. Between that Cosby show, feed. I promise you I'm not on one now. I'm bringing up the Cosby show. I'm bringing up edible packs and everything else. What am I doing? Anyway, go ahead.
I also thought the Heat were going to win the 2014 title because they signed Greg Oden. But anyway, let's get to an email from Thaddeus, a longtime open floor listener and emailer. Thaddeus, thank you. You're in the Hall of Fame. You're probably more important to the show than I am, if I'm being completely honest. So thank you, Thaddeus, for all your emails. He goes, what's up, open floor? This is maybe how he talks. I don't know. I'm assuming his tone. Mitchell to New York. Donovan Mitchell to New York seems like a foregone conclusion at this point. And honestly, it's one of those where the superstar wants the big market and it makes sense for both sides. The Knicks can give a great package of picks and a young player or two for a Utah rebound. Regardless of what you think about Mitchell as a guy to lead the Knicks to wins and playoff success, he's a borderline top 25 player entering his prime years, and in a 30-team league, you don't balk at those guys if you don't have one. But now I have to ask, where would you put the Knicks? Let's say they send out Randall and Quickley with whatever picks. Is the remaining roster a top 4 East team? Would you even favor them to be out of the play-in? I've seen reaction kind of all over the board on where the Knicks would be with Mitchell. I think if they kept Barrett, I actually really like Brunson, Barrett, and Mitchell. I think Mitchell has gotten a little bit underrated, is not the right word, but I think people are maybe there's been, I'm trying to correct the overcorrection that I think is happening. Yeah, what do you think about Mitchell and the Knicks? Let's say in this scenario they have Barrett and Brunson on the team as well.
So I would have this question regardless of whether they get Mitchell, which it's not enough to decide not to do the trade, but I really want them, if they're going to trade for Mitchell, to keep Quentin Grimes. Mm. Because I kind of feel like the rumors that you hear coming up that Utah really wants him. He was dominant.
Yeah.
As much as you can be dominant within Summer League as a sophomore player. I mean, he was really, really good at Summer League. He is he reminds me of kind of like a Landry Shamet sort of player where he he would fit most teams. He can knock down three. Like, he probably fits most teams better than Shamet does. He's bigger than Landry Shamet.
I like Grimes. He had a great second half of the season.
He's going to be a good defender in this league. He's a good three-point shooter. He hustles. I think he's an energy player. He's, you know, you don't need him probably. You're not expecting him to go out and get you 25. So, like, he can do his job night to night. And I kind of feel like when you're moving in pieces and moving out pieces, he's the sort of guy that should fit with a really good go-to scorer or two really well. And a guy that will probably benefit even more than your average guy if you have to throw more attention at someone like Mitchell or Brunson to just have out there on the wing or in the corner. So I would like it a lot more if they don't have to move him, even if it's quickly that they have to move. Some fans may not love that, but you're going to have a lot of ball handling on this roster. Let's not forget about someone like Barrett, who you're still trying to develop. You want him to have the ball a decent amount, but how much is he going to have it if you've got Brunson and Mitchell handling it? So
yeah,
Grimes, for that reason, I think is really nice to have, because you're going to need guys that don't really need the ball. Quickly would need it. You know, even if it's off the bench, he would need the ball. How are they as a team? Like, I think it's a little bit optimistic, a little overly optimistic maybe, to think that Randall would be one of the guys sent back. I don't know that Utah will want him.
They'd have to find a third team.
I mean, if you do a trade straight up with Utah and they take him, if they want Grimes, let it happen. Like, fine. Because at that point, you're answering a lot of questions. Like, I just kind of feel like Mitchell, I'd have to look at his numbers. I feel like he's like an okay, sometimes slightly below average three-point shooter for what he is and what he's perceived as. And because of that, between him and the idea, like, Michael's written about the fact that Brunson's not a great pull-up three-point shooter. He's not asked to do it much because he's playing alongside Luka, who's setting him up. At a certain point, you kind of look up Barrett and all the other guys. Like, none of them are really known as three-point shooters. Grimes is. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, you've got a lot of ball handling. Three guys that can handle the ball for you, but none of them are really big, big three-point threats. Mitchell, maybe through volume, but he's not a really, really efficient shooter from out there. So if you can get rid of Randall, who clogs stuff up for you because he's also really not a good three-point shooter, absolutely you do it and you ask questions later. You're already going to be giving up a lot of picks anyway. If you can get rid of Randall and kind of dump some of that salary there, because he's not like a guy that's got a year left on his deal. He's got a couple of years left on a deal that's paying him, I think, more than 100 mil. So that question is huge. Like, what do you think of them? If he's not there, you're totally remaking this roster aside from just bringing in Mitchell. You would have more than half your starting lineup is new at that point, probably. Yeah. I would love it if they can do that. If they can't, it's a little early to know. Like, I'd like to see what's going to happen with Fournier. Can you go and get a defender to bring in for him, like a wing defender? But I tend to think that they'll make the playoffs as like a back end team, maybe a play in with Mitchell. But if they can move Randall, depending on what they replace him with, what else they're doing, who else they're getting from Utah, or who else they're sending out, I like their prospects a little bit more. I just kind of feel like it's a little bit clogged if you've got Randall and Mitchell and Brunson and Barrett. You basically have, at best, like 235% three-point shooters in there and then some worse than that. And I'm not, you know, and Randall is considerably worse than that. So I'm not really loving that, if that's what it is. But it's not, I mean, like, it's also a young enough team to where you can kind of fix stuff on the fly and go. You've got a lot of young guys that could step up. So I see them as like maybe a 40-ish, between 40 and 45, if they can unload Randall and get Mitchell at the same time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think if they move Randall, that gives everyone a lot more space. You can't have four guys who really, really, really need the ball in their hands with Barrett, Mitchell, Brunson, and Randall. But if they're able to move Randall, and you have three guys who I think it's fair to say are not in their primes yet, between Brunson, Barrett, and Mitchell.
Yeah.
I like that team, and I'm willing to say that they're a six seed. I'm willing to go there. I'm willing to get in the six, out of the play-in in the playoffs. So I'm into the idea. I do think the Knicks should do the trade. People are like, oh, it's the Knicks nicking or whatever. I mean, we just saw Rudy Gobert got moved for however many draft picks he got moved. Yeah. What's Donovan Mitchell? He's not even 25 yet, I don't think.
No, at some point, though, we're going to have to start asking the question of, like, how many picks is too many? Like,
it's for getting some out of these guys, hand. It's getting
like
out of hand.
5 and 6 picks for these guys that are, you know, like, we'll do not our NBA Anthony rank Davis. Later this offseason. Yeah, yeah. But, like, we're talking about guys that are probably not higher than 20th on our list.
Yeah.
Or in that range, slightly lower than that range. And it's like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
I don't know how we quite got here. Yeah. You know, I think Zach Lowe
the Timberwolves did not help anyone.
No, they did not. Because I'm not even blown away by the picks, although I am. I'm blown away by the picks and like 3 of their top 7 rotation guys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think Zach Lowe wrote his column a week or so ago about the Jrue Holiday trade and how that kind of started. Precipitated some of this with the idea of just kind of going all in, but
I mean, it makes sense if you're the Bucks and title. You have Giannis, yeah,
right, exactly. Yeah. The Knicks, you know, like the Timberwolves, I can kind of understand. The Knicks, it's a little early for that, but then again, they can do that and still have some of their own picks. So, I mean, that's the other thing that when we talk about law Knicks, we're normally talk about them trading every pick they have for the next 38 years.
Yeah,
they've got. You know, more picks
yeah,
than
they and they, you know, they stacked they normally up, yeah. would
have. They've got, you know, they're one of the most loaded teams in the league as far as how many picks they have. So I'm just a little bit like I hear most people saying just do whatever it takes from a pick standpoint. And I guess within the stratosphere of what teams are doing now, that sounds okay, but it's just I'm still trying to still getting used to 5.
No,
and 6
I'm with you. I'm with you. It's gotten ridiculous. They're, like you said, in a better position because they have 3 firsts that aren't their own that they can trade. I want to get to one last question today. It's a fun one. This one comes from Don Knapp. Shout out to Don, who sent us a bunch of questions that we'll probably get to over the summer. Don, the principal of Pikes Peak School of Expeditionary Learning? Why am I not able to say this word? Expeditionary Learning? In Falcon, Colorado. I don't know what expeditionary learning is, but that sounds really cool. shout out to Don. I would love to go on an expedition one day, especially in a city called Falcon. That's sick. Anyway, Don goes, I've never been to Florida, the great state of Florida, the gunshot state. What a bummer. Which means I've never been to Orlando. I mean, come on, man. You got to go to Disney World. Why isn't Orlando the city more of a draw for NBA players? I get that the front office might have its issues, but I never hear about how great Orlando's weather is or location is, whereas I hear a ton about Milwaukee and Minnesota and how the weather keeps free agents away. Is it just the front office? I doubt it's because Shaq made sure to get away. Chris, would you ever live in Orlando?
No. I'm long-winded, but let me just keep it short there. I actually think you said the person's name is Don.
Mm-hmm.
I like the question. I kind of feel like you're more likely to have this question if you've never been there. Because, yes, I think Orlando, like, on the surface
it sounds intriguing.
Yeah, on the surface, not even on the surface. I think it's right there neck and neck with New York every year for the most visited city, you know, the biggest tourist city. It is, you know, the weather's good, obviously year round.
No state income tax.
Yeah. The difference though, is that there's not much there outside of Disney World. And I'm not, I say that with no disrespect to people that are from there, that live there, that love it there. I've been there plenty. I've spent some time there before. But that's the perception. And I think particularly when you're talking about mostly young black men in their 20s, it's not. There's not that much to do outside of Disney or to go watch like an Orlando Magic game. It's a city that's largely built around the tourism industry as it relates to Disney. So it's, I mean, like if you were going to pick cities in Florida to live in, I don't know that it would finish in the top 3, which that sounds harsh, but I just think it's the way people think. And then the irony of what he said at the very end is he said, I doubt it's because Shaq made sure to get away. I would really, you know, we were on the book suggestion tip last week. Three Ring Circus, I think, was one of the ones I suggested. If you read it by Jeff Perlman, which is about, you know, the Shaq, Kobe, Phil era Lakers, that actually is why Shaq left, is that aside from thinking that Orlando was a little bit too small for him, he left in part. The thing that really set him over the edge was there were two or three things that did. One of them was Orlando kind of lowballing him. But maybe the biggest factor and the thing that he actually said he was leaving over and confided to Jeff that he was leaving over was that, and granted, this was the 90s. It's 2022 now. But this was the late 90s.
The poll, right?
The Orlando Sentinel did a poll among fans. Now, it was a really half-assed question of, like, should the Lakers pay Shaquille O'Neal $106 million to, like, come back or something? Like, I think that was what he'd said he wanted, or maybe what another team was offering. Like, the Lakers obviously wanted to get in on him. And that sounds like, I mean, that sounds like an absurd amount of money today. We're having that conversation over Jalen Brunson today. This was 1996, I think, or 1997 or whatever it was. And you weren't hearing at the time about nine-figure, you know, deals for athletes, even though Shaq was probably the best athlete in the NBA at the time. So it was just like kind of a flat, like no nuance question. Other players were starting to go for that much. Juwan Howard, Alonzo Mourning was about to make that much money. But the answer, you know, when they ran the poll, I think it was something like 93-7. No, he didn't deserve that much money. But it wasn't just that. It was also that the tone around people saying no, including the people that were calling in, because this was like basically pre-internet. These were people calling in to the newspaper to give their response. And there were so many racist responses to the question of, one, that they'd already offered Shaq money and he was declining it. And that's why the number was getting pushed to the low hundreds. But also kind of like, how is he not grateful? Like, it's still the South. Particularly in the 90s, Orlando's not. It's very different than like a Miami. It's not the same place. So no, I mean, it actually did have something to do with why Shaq wanted to get away. He felt like people didn't appreciate him, and he felt like some of it was rooted in some really nasty, ugly stuff. And people from the newspaper said they were hearing the N-word left and right in response to that question. So, you know, I'm not going to say that I think that that's a huge part of the culture in Orlando. Again, that was 25, 30 years ago, but I do think that, it's a less urban place than people think. I think the Orlando Magic and Disney World have made it more urban in people's mind than it actually is. But it's not a place that a lot of people, certainly a lot of young people, choose to live.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I haven't been to Orlando a ton recently. It's a nice city even. Like, it's probably great for families, and I'm sure even if you are, even if you're very rich but older, you could buy like a a gigantic house in the suburbs. I think Shaq still has a house there. But yes, if you were young and you were looking for a lot of things to do, it is not Miami. It's not even Atlanta. I think Atlanta should be a much bigger free agent destination than it is. So we're with you, Don, but I think there's in fact a lot of reasons, because you could get kind of the weather of Orlando and a lot of NBA cities, but a lot more to do for, like you said, if you're young, have money, I think there's other places where you'd probably rather spend your time, because, yeah, I think Orlando's probably a great place for families. It is very family-oriented because of the theme parks. Shout out to Islands of Adventure. Do you know what Grad Bash is?
I've never even heard of that, I don't think.
Oh, this is such a Florida thing, but our senior year of high school.
Okay.
Our senior year of high school, we went to Universal Studios and Islands of Adventure, like, it's something like 50, I don't know how many high schools is in. It's dozens and dozens of high school. They do it over three or four nights, but you go to the theme parks after they close. So, like, we get on a bus from school at, like, 3 p.m., get
that to the park so at 6. Fun.
The park is closed, and then it's just you're there until, like, midnight. And it was
incredible. I've done that before, but I've never had, like, a name for it. I've had where one of my friends, his dad worked for a company.
And there's a concert.
Yeah.
And like, so DJ Khaled and B.O.B. perform.
What?
And Jason Derulo.
Can we do this now? Like, I'm 35 and I would do this.
It would be sick.
I had a friend who, his dad worked for a company or corporation that, like, rented out Six Flags one day, and it's so much fun to kind of have free roam of the park like that.
Yep.
Free reign of the park like that. But I'd never heard of the... What did you... You said it's called Grad Bash?
Yeah, yeah. It's That's Grad so Bash cool. and Grad Night. Grad Night is Disney, and I think Grad Bash is Universal Park. We went on the Dudley Do-Right log flume ride, and I was pretending to be very scared on it to like mess with my friends. Like, they knew I was doing a bit, and this woman who didn't go to my high school got off the ride and called me a very nasty word.
Oh, God.
Because she thought I was really scared. And I was like, well, first of all, even if you did think I was actually scared,
why would you?
This is not really an appropriate response.
Yeah.
It was an interesting moment. Clearly, it has stuck with me nearly 12 years later. So
I hear you.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Chris, that's going to do it for today's episode. But before we go, I don't know if I'm allowed to do this. I really don't. All I will say is we got an email this morning that we did get an addition to the Open Floor family. There's a young Pina now joining, which means we're getting more outnumbered by Celtics fans by the day. I'll leave Mike to you know, he can share all the details if and when he wants. All I'll say is the baby, the family, everyone's doing fine. So congrats to Mike. Even though I want to be clear, we're not missing him. This has been a ton of fun without him, obviously. But yeah, so shout out to Mike, I guess.
Yes, shout out to Mike. I am super happy for him and his wife. I texted him this morning to see how he's doing.
You really scooped everyone. You sent him the text. I was waiting for the announcement. You had to be the little goody two shoes. Be like, check in. You're trying to move. You're already number one on the co-host rankings.
Nah, man. We're sitting here. We're sitting here group texting about Nick's press conferences and whatnot with Michael in it. Like, the least I can do is unplug from that, which doesn't fundamentally change my day to day and like check in on my teammate. But I'm just happy that everybody's doing okay, and super excited to see pictures whenever that's the case. But like you said,
calling out my group text too. That's cool.
Yep. Well,
that'll do it for today's episode of Open Floor. Chris, always a pleasure. To our emailers, thank you so much for your emails. Please keep the emails coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com. We'll catch up with you guys soon. Please continue to enjoy the NBA offseason.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.